This week in OEJLIC's Shir Klali on the Parsha, we're going to be engaging Parshat Vayera. We're going to be doing it in a little bit of a different style than we normally do it. The two Parshiot of Lech Lecha and Vayera are obviously very intimately connected. They're the story of Avram Avinu. We're going to be crossing the boundaries of those two Parshiot and doing so by looking at something that's actually sitting behind the scenes in Parshat Lech Lecha, in Parshat Vayera, in Chumash Bereshit, in Chamisha Chumshei Torah, in fact, in all of Judaism as a whole. We're going to be tackling a big topic, and we're going to see how it very much is planted within the fabric of this Parsha, and hopefully along your learning, and perhaps even in some of our Shir Klalis, this is something which will continue to come up. And we're going to be touching on some very deep topics in order to do that. But to get there, we're actually going to reference very briefly some ideas that we mentioned in last week's Shir Klali on the Parsha, but it's not a necessary prerequisite. We're just going to summarize some of the key points that we made, which was that from the beginning of Bereshit, from the beginning of Sefer Bereshit, so we talked about how there were 10 generations until Noah. The world is wiped out, and then it takes 10 generations to get from Noah to Avram. And we saw a Midrash last time, which talked about how, like, a king that lost a pearl in the sand and sent his advisors to go and find, to sift through that sand until finding that pearl. So too did HaKadosh Baruch Hu spend the 10 generations from Noah to Avraham sifting through the sands of history until that pearl finally emerged. And that pearl was Avram. And so Lech Lecha begins with the story of Avram Avinu. And we talked about last time, we engaged this very, again, also overarching concept that the Ramban puts forth of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim. And we discussed last time how every action that Avram Avinu takes over his lifetime, and particularly in Parshat Lech Lecha, sets the stage for the entirety of Jewish history. That he goes and lays the groundwork for everything that's going to happen for the Jewish people. From going down to Mitzrayim, to the war with the Dalad Malchiot, the four kingdoms that will rise over the course of history, that will have to be down until we can finally come through at the end, whole, like at the end of Brit Ben Abitarim, having survived the trials of history, and come forth in Yimot HaMashiach, whole at the end, as the one that survived, and comes at the top, and finally have the Malchut of Kal Yisrael shine through. That being the case, once Avram Avinu has gone through that whole process, he literally has walked through, has embodied, has laid the groundwork for all of Jewish history. This is what it's going to be. This is the paradigm. He now finishes Brit Ben Abitarim towards the end of Parshat Lech Lecha. What should happen next? We now know what history is going to entail. What should now Avram Avinu need to do? What happens next in the story? What should happen next in the story? Yes, says Devorah. That's the logical next step. If you're going to produce Jewish history, so what should you do? Produce Jewish history. And that starts with Yitzchak, who is going to be the individual who is going to take Jewish history forward. We have one slight problem. It's the same slight problem we have almost half the time that ask questions, which is, it's not what happens. It's very much not what happens. And we left this hanging last week as well, because we didn't engage the end of the Parsha. What happens after that in Parshat Lech Lecha? What happens right after Brit Ben Abitarim? He marries Hagar and, or he takes Hagar to produce a child, and he has Ishmael. That's incredibly odd. If we've just walked through Jewish history, set the stage, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, and now we're ready to start Jewish history, then what should happen next is the birth of Yitzchak. And yet Ishmael's born first. Then the Parsha goes forward and finishes off without the birth of Yitzchak. And only now in Parshat Vayera, and it's not even at the beginning of Parshat Vayera. The beginning of Parshat Vayera is the promise of the birth of Yitzchak. But he's not even born until somewhere in the middle of Parshat Vayera. The implication there is that in order for Yitzchak to be born, Yishmael needed to be born first. Because if the natural, the knee-jerk reaction, the correct knee-jerk reaction that Devorah had was, if we're now ready to start Jewish history, let's have Yitzchak. And despite that being the logical next step, the Torah says, no. First, we need to produce Ishmael. What that means is that, and hear the words, Ishmael, therefore, somehow, is a necessary prerequisite in order to allow for Yitzchak to be born. Or he wouldn't have come first. Or that story wouldn't have happened at all. Because the goal is to produce Yitzchak. So if Yishmael was produced before, and somehow Yishmael is a necessary prerequisite. The birth of Yishmael, Yishmael the individual, is a necessary prerequisite to Yitzchak. And what we're going to address today is why? And how? In what way? What's the nature of this narrative? What does it tell us about Yishmael? What does it tell us about Abraham? What does it tell us about Yitzchak? And to do that again, we're going to be engaging some very broad and deep concepts and putting forth perhaps some very challenging ideas. I was just, I re-listened to when we did these shiurim in the Midrashah 2.5 years ago, and there were some of the most animated shiurim. There's a lot of things to take in, some hard things to accept in terms of what we're presenting here. I'm not saying you have to accept them or not accept them. Our goal is to understand. This is my understanding of it. This is the Masorah that I have from my Rebbe, and it certainly pulls a lot of these stories together. I'll stand by it, but our goal here together is to attempt to at least understand this perspective, which I think it will be an incredibly enlightening one. Let's zoom out, and we're going to come back to this question in a little while. We're going to take a detour. Torah is multifaceted. Torah, in fact, is infinite. It comes from an infinite source. It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a reflection to the greatest extent that can be of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. But that being said, the Gemara identifies that there are four distinct layers to Torah. And those four distinct layers are encompassed in the word. Pardes. Excellent.
Pardes.
The Gemara tells us of a story where four rabbis went into Pardes, went into this mysterious orchard, clearly something that's very dangerous to do, because only one person emerged, normal, healthy, and alive. That definitely, when one enters into the deeper realms of this orchard, one has to be careful, one has to think things through carefully, one has to really understand what they're talking about. But these four parts of Torah are the four stages, the four layers of which Torah is predicated upon. And they stand for Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. Without going too deeply into each one of these, Pshat is normally explained as the most direct meaning of the text. I think calling it simple is a disservice to the Torah. It's certainly the most direct meaning of the text. Drash is the exegetical level of the text, where we're learning out from it on a level where it's still revealed. It exists in Torah Sheba Al Peh in a way that eventually produced the Mishnah, the Gemara. We have Sod. What does Sod mean? Literally. It's a secret. There's some secretive, hidden layer of Torah. A layer of Torah that's meant to be a secret. It's intentionally a secret. Now, what realm of Torah is this word normally associated with in our day and age?
Kabbalah.
Louder?
Kabbalah.
Yeah, Kabbalah. What does Kabbalah mean? What does the word Kabbalah mean? Mazel lekabel.
Receive.
To receive and to accept. It's both. Here we're hoping to exceed, to receive. And I'm hoping also to accept, but I'm going for receive. Kabbalah means to receive. And that makes sense. Because how does a secret travel? How do you know a secret?
Someone
has to tell it to you. And they come, and they whisper it in your ear. It's just from one person to another. And the only way to know that secret is if somebody tells it to you. And you receive it in a direct line from one person to another. And that's what's behind the scenes, without getting into anything fancy, of what Kabbalah is. It's receiving the secretive, more hidden side of Torah in the same way that when we share a secret, we're sharing something deeper, something more internal, something, a deeper side of ourselves, and that's why we don't want to share it with the whole world. That's why we're only sharing it with somebody we trust. That's why we're doing it in the proper context, in a safe context. That's a big part of what Kabbalah is. It's the secretive area of Torah that's meant to be given over carefully, delicately, intentionally, and that I wouldn't have known had it not been told to me and I not received it from somewhere else. And very briefly, remez, which means a hint, is the hinting of sod back into the text, which we'll swing back to in a second. We're going to explore a fundamental concept in Kabbalah, and we're going to do that in this forum, which is more public, though I'm very excited that I basically recognize every single face in the room and have a rapport with every one of you, so it's not a random group of people. And additionally, unfortunately, in the world that we live in, sod is no longer in the confines of being a secret. Sod is very often given over in very public ways, in destructively public ways, and it's important to engage these concepts to the best of our ability with our own limitations. Some of us may even heard a concept that one shouldn't study Kabbalah until they're 40. There's clearly a recognition that one needs to have an advanced level of understanding to be able to engage these concepts properly. But on the flip side, as Mary points out, in a world where these concepts are out there, and they're out there from negative sources and in destructive ways, at least to the level that we can understand, to engage some of the more, quote-unquote, basic or primary areas of Kabbalah in their right forum, in the right way, which I hope for us to accomplish here, is an important thing to do. When it comes to Kabbalah, there is a general sense that it's kind of out there concepts. Stuff that's, again, this secretive stuff that's beyond, it exists in its own realm, it exists kind of in a bubble, and that's just not how Torah works. Each one of these levels, Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod, they're different layers of Torah, different floors of Torah, they're interconnected, they're interlocked. One cannot exist in the absence of the other. And every level of Torah always has to link back to the text. If you can't get back to the text of Chumash, to the text of Tanakh, then you have to seriously question whether the concept is true. And so too by Kabbalah, even though in our minds is this out there thing, everything in Kabbalah needs to be rooted in Pesukim. It has to be so. Everything emanates from Torah Shebichtav. There's a concept, some of you might be familiar with in Kabbalah, that's referred to as the Midot or the Sfirot. Anybody here heard the term Midot or Sfirot before? Some of you have. Some of you, I'm happy to say, will be your first exposure to it. So Midot or Sfirot. What does the word Midah mean? Say again?
An attribute.
An attribute or a character trait. Now, here's the tricky thing about Midot. Normally when we talk of the Midot, we talk of seven Midot, and we'll name them in a moment. There are three higher Midot, the upper Sfirot, which we're not going to deal with, we're going to deal strictly with the lower seven. But there's this concept of these seven Midot, these seven character traits. And one needs to carefully understand what these Midot are. Because to say that these Midot that exist, these character traits, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has these character traits, that's Kfira. God is infinite. God is not limited by anything. God cannot have character traits. There's no such thing. And yet these Midot exist. And yet the Mikubalim talk all the time about these Midot. And yet they're going to become fundamental to this very Shir. So how do we make sure that they're not Kfira? So this is something to hold on to, because when you learn about these things, or if they come up and you're learning over time, this is a very important definition. What the Midot are, and we're going to stick to the word Midot, it's a little bit more down-to-earth term than Sfirot. When we talk about the Midot are the character traits that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates and utilizes those traits to guide his world. So when I feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, I'm feeling God's presence. But it in no way tells me anything about God's infinite essence, because that's beyond me. In this world, we can feel God's presence, but as finite creatures, as finite beings, we can't understand God's essence, which is infinite. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midot are his created traits, the traits that he created, through which he guides, he is manhig the world. They're not him in essence, but they're how we feel his presence in this world. Torah tells us that we're created B'Tselem Elokim. And one layer of that reflects this as well. Just like God creates seven traits by which to guide his world, Chazal explained to us that each one of us, that every single one of you in this world, in the world, also true, and in this room as well, is an Olam Katan, is a miniature of the world, is a miniature world in and of themselves. And therefore, being created B'Tselem Elokim, each one of us have these Zion Midot embedded within us, and we are expected to intentionally rule and guide our own internal world through these Midot as well. And through understanding these Midot and mastering these Midot, we're meant to take ownership of our own internal world, to guide our own internal world, to rule over our own internal world. And that's part of what it means to be created B'Tselem Elokim. Questions, thoughts, comments till this point?
Another interpretation of the word midah is measure. So if we say it like that, and we say that these are the measures by which Hashem created the world, or then it's not like confining it to those seven or eight characters.
We're going to confine it to those seven.
Okay.
You'll see why as we go along.
Okay.
We're going to confine it to those seven. So what are these seven midot? So I could put a lot of words on the board, but you should rightfully ask, where do you know that from? So what did we say? Where does everything have to come from? Emanates from the text. And so we're going to learn out what these midot are from the text itself. This is a text which we say frequently, and like many texts, have no idea what we're saying. We say it multiple times per week. We sing it on Shabbat. And it's a very, very deep pasuk, which gives birth to these seven midot, or rather reflects the reality of these seven midot. And that's source number one on your sheets. Recognize this pasuk? Lecha Hashem Agdula, Vagvura, Vatiferet, Vanitzach, Vahod, Ki Kol Bashamayim Vaaretz, Lecha Hashem Amamlacha. From this pasuk comes forth the seven midot. Lecha Hashem Hagdula, number one, Gvura, number two, Tiferet, number three, Netzach, number four. Hod, number five. Ki kol bashamayim of aretz is its own midah. And mamlacha or malchut is the final midah. When you do see them in a sefer, sometimes you might even see them in a chart, they're often organized as follows, and a couple of the words change. They're just given different ways of being framed by the Kabbalim over time. We have gedula becomes chesed, gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Ki Kol Bashamayim of Aretz becomes known by the Mikvam as Midah of Yisod, and then Malchut. Did we see lines? No. Don't worry about it. Okay? Implying, most importantly, that these don't exist in a vacuum, that they're all linked to each other. That they all have to harmonize with one another. Anybody have any idea of what's linked to these seven midot? Anybody ever seen any parallels to other things that are linked to these seven midot? Go for it. What? Say again?
Like the
Yushpizin are often linked to them. We're going to come back to that. Say again?
We count Sphira.
Yeah, so first of all, so coming back to, going to starting with your point and then coming right back to where you are, because the goal is to get back to the Avot, right? We still are in Parshat Vayera and Lech Lecha. But starting with your point, Ariella, all systems of seven have to line up with this construct. So name any system of seven. There are so many systems of seven in Judaism.
Days of the week.
Days of the week, which is why, and that's come back to your point, Aliza, it's specifically seven. Each day of the week emanates from one of these midot. And that's why when you go back to the very beginning of Parshat Bereishit, each day is its own paragraph, emphasizing that each one is distinct, is unique, has its own identity. And somehow, over the course of investigation, it takes a lifetime to understand. I don't understand the depth of all of it yet. Chesed is going to be linked to Yom Rishon. Gvura is going to be linked to Yom Sheni. People who are in the Midrashah this semester, think about when we talked about Korach and Machloket, that's going to have to link back into the same conversation. Tiferet is going to link into Yom Shlishi. Shabbat is going to be linked to Malchut. That one sounds a little bit more familiar to us, right? The concept of Shabbos Malchata. Some sort of kingship that's inherently related to Shabbat that we know, but we don't know why, and this is part of why that fits in. What other systems do we have? Interesting. The answer is for sure, and I've never thought about that one. Excellent. Keep going. I think you even mentioned one a minute ago. Ariana, what were you talking about? Sfirat HaOmer, right? Where we have 7 weeks, and in fact, over there, we start getting into these Sfirot. That's interesting. What was that? What was the name of that period of the year called again? Sfirat HaOmer. Interesting how the Sfirot overlap with Sfirat HaOmer. It's where a lot of the discussion of these Midot is also contained. Shemitah, cycle of 7. Yovel, 7 times 7, not unlike Sfirat HaOmer. The 7 fruits of Eretz Yisrael. The 7 nations that we conquer in Eretz Yisrael. All of these fit into this paradigm. All of these are dealt with. But coming back to Ayelet's point, these are overtly linked to certain individuals as well. That there were certain individuals who came along over time and fixed, established these realities into the world. They fully brought out a reality of chesed into the world, and another one fully brought out a reality of gevurah into the world. They fixed them into the world. Each one has a carrier. Each one has a chariot and an individual. So who are these individuals? Let's go through the Ushbizin. Not that I'm taking aside, but in the correct order. Yeah. We have Abraham is going to be linked to chesed. Put that top, that's fine. Abraham. Gvura.
Yitzchak.
Tiferet.
Yaakov.
Okay, let's get the right one now. Netzach.
Moshe.
Hod. Aaron. Yisod is Seif. And Malchut. Also not so surprisingly is David, who is the paradigmatic king in Klal Yisrael. Okay. So each one of these traits is fixed into reality by a particular individual. So let's start talking about our topic, Abraham, Chesed. Let's talk about Chesed a little bit. What does Chesed mean? Let's tackle one of these midot. We're not going to even scratch the surface, but let's tackle it the best we can. What does chesed? What does chesed mean? How do we translate chesed?
Kindness.
Keep going. Full room of Ovdei Hashem here. We can't define chesed. Come on.
Giving.
That's not enough. Okay. Kindness. Giving. Keep going.
Altruism.
Good. It's a good start.
Benevolence.
To use what I'm most familiar with culturally when it's awkwardly translated is loving kindness. Right? It's got to have that real good feel to it. Loving kindness. So that definition, yeah?
It's like it's a response to.
Yes, we're going to come back to that in a second. It's all fitting into this definition that we've created. Kindness, charity, altruism, benevolence, loving kindness, giving. The only problem is that the Torah doesn't always frame it that way. Let's take a look at a pasuk that's going to be really problematic if we use any one of these definitions in the context of that pasuk. Source number 2. Source number 2 exists in Parshat Kedoshim when it restates all of the usur relationships, the usur physical relationships that one is not allowed to have. And one of those relationships is listed as such, Perek Chaf Pasuk Yud Zayin, source number 2 in Vayikra, V'isha sheyikachat achuto bat aviv uvat imo, V'ra'a et ervata, V'hi tira et ervato, Lo alinu chas v'shalom, if a brother has a relationship with his sister. Rachman al Islam. It should never happen. It's an isser, it's isser in the Torah. And exactly what we would expect, how does the Torah define it? Chesed hu. That's awkward. Oh, that's kindness, giving, altruism, benevolence, loving kindness. Certainly not how I would define the word chesed in the context of that paragraph, of that sentence. V'nichretu le'nei b'nei amam. They'll be cut off from their people because they revealed the nakedness and they will bear their sin. So we're going to have to come to a much more advanced, both at the same time nuanced but broader definition. What then is chesed? What's an overarching definition of chesed that can hold this context and this context all at the same time? Being open. Take it further. Good. Not just being open. These things aren't about being open. Well, again, you're going to run trouble with the chesed and the pasuk.
Doing the right thing?
That's definitely going to be problematic in that pasuk.
Taking action?
Getting there, good. We're getting one step further out. Just pulling that together and just framing it a little bit more tightly.
Open to action.
The definition of chesed, the more refined definition of chesed, is going beyond one's boundaries. Anytime that I go beyond my boundaries, I'm doing an act of chesed. Chesed is neither good nor bad. Chesed is. It's a midah. It's a character trait. It exists. It's not tov or ra. It's a tool. You can use it to build. You can use it to destroy. Chesed is the act of going beyond my boundaries. When I open myself up, as you said, what was the word that you used? Yeah. Take action, and I go beyond myself. Take action externally, go beyond myself. Then I'm doing an act of chesed. When I help a woman across the street, when I go on a mission somewhere, when I do an act of benevolence or altruism, these are all words that describe me going beyond myself for the other and doing a good thing. And it's chesed not because it's good. It's chesed because I'm going beyond myself to do for the other. But chesed being neutral, there are also many negative ways that I can go beyond myself. One aspect is this. If one goes beyond the boundaries of self to connect with another, and that other is one of the Asur Arayot, that's destructive chesed. That's distorted chesed. That's poisonous chesed. It's still chesed, but it's broken chesed. Think about other ways. What are ways that we can go beyond our boundaries in ways that are destructive, that are usser? This I understand if you can't all come up with because you're all on such high levels. Give some examples of things that are really obvious, usser things that are going beyond my boundaries. Killing someone.
Speaking about someone else.
Speaking about someone, that's nuanced. I mean literally going beyond my boundaries.
Stealing.
What?
Stealing.
Trespassing. Let me put a little on the board. We got a whole bunch there. We had trespassing.
Aggravated assault.
Wow, it's very specific. We had trespassing. We had theft. We have arayot. Okay. We'll come back to that list soon. But again, these midot are neutral. When we have this definition of chesed being going beyond one's boundaries, again, these concepts that we're learning and why we're spending the time on this is because these put so much of Torah into perspective, because Torah lives on these four planes, and it puts things into context. Let's go back to Noah for a second. In the time of Noah, why was the world destroyed?
Hamas.
How do you define Hamas?
Stealing.
Stealing. What was the other thing that's often quoted as being the reason why the world was destroyed? Theft and arayos. Let's put all that together under arayos. Theft and arayos. Well, which one is it? Was it theft or was it arayos? You could hear two different drushes and two different shuls and be very confused. Which one was it? What's the answer? What was wrong with that generation? There was a breakdown of chesed. As the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk number 3 in Tehillim, we might be familiar with it, Ki Amarti, Olam Chesed Ibaneh. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, shockingly, he started at the beginning, with Yom Rishon, with a day that's representative of
chesed. Olam chesed yibaneh. The foundation of the world is chesed. But the positive side of chesed. And when the generation of Noah had a complete breakdown in the reality of chesed, a total distortion of the chesed upon which the world was founded, what then had to happen? The world needed to be destroyed and started over. And even how was it destroyed? How was the world destroyed at that time?
With
an outpouring of chesed that was so much that it destroyed the world. With destructive chesed. Midah keneged midah, reflecting that very generation. These things all come into play into each other. Looking at the next midah, if we have chesed on one side, we have gvura on the other side. How do we define gvura?
Strength.
Strength.
How do you
We're going to get there. Right, so the Maharal points out very beautifully on the Mishnah, Izu Gibor. Stand to that Mishnah, Izu Gibor. Hakoveshet Yitzro. So when we think of strength, we normally think of literal physical strength. Says the Maharal, why didn't the Mishnah say Izu Gibor? Who's a Gibor? The one who can lift the most weights. The one who can run the farthest. The one who can run the fastest. Why didn't it focus on physical strength? Says the Maharal, that's not possible. Because animals have physical strength. And we're talking about Midot, we're talking about something which are uniquely human. And so what's the aspect of gvura by a human being? What's the elevated level of gvura? It's not physical strength, but internal strength. Overcoming one's inclinations. Doing the internal work that, where does that work exist, Ayelet?
Within yourself.
Within myself. Gvura is remaining within my boundaries. Not going beyond my boundaries. And again, as we pointed out before, a person needs all of these traits working in harmony to fully, properly exist in this world. You can pull into yourself in a way that's destructive. You can hold back things that belong to others. You can hold back from connecting to others in a destructive way. But there are also boundaries that we're meant to put up between ourselves and others, which are absolutely necessary, and some of which are chayav. Chesed and gvura, going beyond, staying within. We're going to move forward because we're running out of time. Let's come back to our story, right? This theoretically was strictly on the parsha at one point. Let's come back to our story. What's happening with Avraham? What's happening with Ishmael? What's happening with Yitzchak? As we put up on the board, Avraham is chesed. Avraham is the embodiment of chesed. Avraham is the expression of chesed. He's fixing chesed into the world. And there's two aspects of that. One can say almost that there's the genotypical level. Any science majors here? Usually not. And there's the phenotypical level. There's the part that's embedded with our genes. That part of him is, he is chesed. Inside of him. It's a part of him. But not everything that's a part of us always manifests outwardly. That's a phenotype. How do I show that to the world? Avraham is the embodiment of chesed, and everything that he does, and when you look at Parshiot, Lech Lecha and Vayira, this is the lesson in chesed. If one wants to understand what chesed is, this is where to learn it. Because he is chesed. But if he is chesed, what does that mean? What must he contain within him? Both the positive and the negative. Now, he may not let the negative side manifest. He's an expression of the positive side of chesed. But all chesed exists within Avraham. There's negativity even within Avraham Avinu. And even on the level of chesed. We ask a very powerful question. Why does Ishmael need to come before Yitzchak? We sifted through for 10 generations. We found our pearl in the sand. We found that jewel. But as it turns out, while we may have found that pearl, we found that jewel, there are still impurities within the system. And for Avraham Avinu to produce the next generation, for Avraham Avinu to produce the beginnings of Klal Yisrael, that system first needs to be cleansed. First, Avraham Avinu needs to remove the negative elements of chesed from within him. To be able to produce Yitzchak from a pure place. In order to do that, two new people have to come onto the scene. And they are Ishmael and Hagar. Ishmael is the embodiment of a reality of the negative elements of Chesed. And we see this throughout the descriptions of Ishmael, in the Psukim, in Chazal, but always linking into these aspects. Let's look at some examples from when he's born in Lech Lecha, when he's exiled in Vayira. Look at the way that the Psukim refer to him. Talk about him. Source number 6. Pasuk Yud. Right before Ishmael is born. Vayomer la, Malach Hashem. The Malach Hashem says to Hagar, Harba arbe et zareich velo yisaper mirov. You're going to have a tremendous number of children. Vayomer la Malach Hashem, and Malach Hashem says, Hinach hara violadet bein. You're going to become pregnant and have a child. Vayikrash mo Ishmael ki shama Hashem et el onyech. You're going to have a child and you're calling Ishmael. And the Malach defines what Ishmael is going to be. V'hu yiyeh pera adam. He's going to be totally wild. No borders, no boundaries. And if you think that I'm reading into the text, read the next line. It could not be more explicitly the negative side of Chesed. Yado bakol v'yad kol bo. A complete loss of any sense of boundary. His hands will be in everything, and everything's hands will be in him. There's no sense of boundary by Ishmael. There's only going beyond oneself. There's no limitations. There's no holding inside. It's all going out. To the point, the Alpnei Kol Achav Yishkon is going to be living on over the entirety of the, over all of the people of the world. No borders, no boundaries. Looking forward to our parsha at the end of Yishmael's story. What profession does Ishmael take up? Take a look in Pasuk Yutet, Pasuk Chaf, in the next source. Vayhi Rovakeshet. Mazer Rovakeshet. He was an archer. Trespassing, going beyond his boundaries into other places that doesn't belong, always trying to reach further. That's what an archer does. They take a bow and arrow, they start from where they are, and they're constantly going into other places with their arrows. They're trying to reach farther than themselves in destructive ways. Trespassing, theft, yadov bakol v'yad kol bo. The Gemara emphasizes that it goes through a whole list of how there are 10 measures of certain things that are put into the world. And 9 go to one thing, and 1 goes to everybody else. And in that Gemara it says, this is a little bit of different Lashon, you can look into it inside if you want. The Gemara says, 9 measures of Arayos, of Znut, go to the Bnei Ishmael, and 1 measure goes to the rest of the world. Because all identifying their identity as a reality of Arayos. It's all this negative side of Chesed that's being removed from the system. But how does that get removed from the system? Let's say that's true. How do you get the negative side of Chesed to be ignited within Abraham, to be drawn out of Abraham? How does that happen? How does that happen? She has a name. Hagar. She very specifically ends up with Hagar, and not just Hagar. How is Hagar defined? Say louder. Shifra Mitzrit. She's specifically a Shifra from Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, which we don't have the time to go all the way back to its origins in Noach, and how what the issues were with Cham, and how Mitzrayim is one of the children of Cham, and the issues revolving Arayos with Cham, but it's there for another time. But we'll take the most explicit source, which is that we actually have a parsha in the Torah that's called Parshat Ha'arayot. It's at the end of Parshat Achrimot. And listen to the introductory words when the Torah introduces Parshat Ha'arayot. pasuk. Sorry, source number 8, Perek Yuchet pasuk Aleph and Vayikra. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Limor. Daber al bnei Yisrael v'marta lehem ani Hashem Elokechem. How does it introduce the pasuk Gimel? Ki maasei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba'lo tasu. Don't be like Mitzrayim. What do Mitzrayim do? It then lists all of the Arayot. Part of their identity, what they were all about, was Arayot. It's why we see some of the central tension in the beginning of Sefer Shmot is between the Jewish people who are focused on producing children versus the Arayot reality of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim from Ham and his child Mitzrayim to Hagar Shefacha Mitzrit to Parshat Arayot. It's a reality of distortion of Chesed. And it's a very deep concept, something which is very practical and very relevant for all of us. Whether it relates to one's friends, whether it relates to all in the right time, no pressure, all in the right time, when you start to date, if you're not already dating, it's something to think about very carefully. That what that reality of that relationship between Hagar and Avraham is that Avraham had inside of him negative elements of Chesed. And the people that we associate with, they bring out certain sides of us. It sounds very down to earth, but it's Torah, it's very down to earth. They bring out certain sides of us. We know certain people who bring out our fun side. If you have them, some pretend I don't have one. It's okay. Bring out your fun side. Bring out your more intellectual side. Bring out your more serious side. Bring out your more thoughtful side. Different people bring out different things. And one has to think very carefully by who they're surrounding themselves with. In kal vachomer, b'menoshal kal vachomer. When one is sitting with somebody, hanging out with somebody, whatever it is, in the context of dating, maybe they do bring out your fun side. But is that the person and the reality of yourself that you want to be living with for the rest of your life? Is that how you're going to build a home and a family? But that person is going to bring out certain parts of you. And is that the reality of yourself that you want to be living your life with? It's a very deep question to be asking when you're sitting across the table from someone or playing a game. I don't know, presuming how many of you are dating. But for example, sitting across the table from someone. Very deep question to ask oneself. And Hagar here is able to ignite the negative realities of Chesed and Avraham and literally draw them out of him and produce Yishmael, who is the embodiment of that reality. Once that happens, once Avraham has been purified of the negative elements of Chesed, now he can produce Yitzchak. That's why Yishmael is a prerequisite to Yitzchak. Avram can't produce Yitzchak until he first produces Yishmael. And then history can move on to its next stage, which is the Yitzchak stage and the Gevura stage. If we would have had a part 2 to this year, we then have to go through Parshat Vayira. Because as an aside, spoilers, the first thing that happens in Parshat Vayira is not the birth of Yitzchak. Somehow first we need the angels to come, the malachim to come, and the promise of Yitzchak, and then the destruction of stone, and then finally Yitzchak is produced, and all of these things which are prerequisites have to be dealt with. There's the two stories of Avimelech in the middle, then finally we get to Akidat Yitzchak, which is the apex of the Parsha. How does that all play out in terms of bringing into a reality Chesed and Gevurah into the world in their fixed, established, purified states? And by the way, because like I mentioned, this is going to be the basis of a whole way of looking at Chumash, Yitzchak also is going to have to go through his process. What happens from Yitzchak? Is Yitzchak now, having been born purely from a purified Avraham, is he done? What happens next? After that? Very similar story. Is Yaakov and Esav. He's not yet ready to produce Klal Yisrael. Somehow something needs to happen with Yitzchak as well, where Esav also is somehow a prerequisite. There it's a little bit more closer and more finely attuned, and maybe we'll talk about it in Toldot. I don't know we're going to talk about it in Toldot yet. Maybe we'll talk about it in Toldot. But somehow, again, that system for him needs to be purified as well through Esav coming out, and only then once we get to Yaakov, somehow Yaakov and Tiferet is that culmination where now we can produce Klal Yisrael. We're out of time. So to wrap up, these are very, very deep concepts. We didn't, again, we barely, to even say that we scratched the surface is not even necessarily meaningful in and of itself. And these paradigms that we built up and these constructs that we built up, they follow through all throughout Torah. And if you keep them in mind and you look at the ways they connect, it opens up worlds of understanding of Torah when we learn any aspect of Torah. But on top of that, a recognition of what we learn from here is that we are all created B'Tselem Elohim. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created these midot and guides his world utilizing these midot, so too do we have similar but very different these midot in ourselves. And our charge is to understand these midot, to conquer these midot, and to rule and guide our own internal world through these midot, to ignite our Avram side, which is the positive side of Chesed, to ignite our Yitzchak side, which is the positive side of Gvura, and to rule our lives from that place, and to look at these stories and understand them, that these are teaching us the ways of living a reality of the positive sides of Chesed, the positive sides of Gvura. We should all be zochet to have an understanding of the depths of Torah. We should all be blessed to understand all the way down to the depths of everything the Torah has to offer, to be able to rule over our own internal worlds, to ignite our chesed, to ignite the positive sides of our chesed and our gvura, to live a life that way, to find people in our lives who bring out the best sides of ourselves, and through that to establish a world of tikkun together, Bezrat Hashem.